Happy Pride! On this week's episode of The Fame Report, I sit down with the co-creators of Tens Magazine, Saley Williams and Deshaun Wesley, where we talk about Deshaun being on the second season of Pose.
Have you been in Pose?
So that's my thing. I'm actually in this season of Pose.
You're in season two?
Yes, I am.
You were in season one?
Nope.
That's exciting!
So I'm in this season. Like,
the appropriation of ballroom culture.
Yes, there's going to be 50-50 of everything. You're going to have the people who are going to bring in the real, authentic, true, like, love and blood, sweat, and tears of ballroom. And you're going to have those who just want to do it because they feel like it's the next opportunity for them to showcase, you know.
To be trendy.
To be trendy. Exactly.
Right.
And how RuPaul and RuPaul's Drag Race kind of fucked things up.
These people are coming, seeing this, have larger platforms than ballroom at the time, and then changing the name and then spreading this information to the masses. When RuPaul's Drag Race started, of course, RuPaul's Drag Race is one of the highest rated LGBT formatted shows. So if you have RuPaul's Drag Race, the most famous drag queen in all of the land, and her girls talking about shablam this and realness and
death drop that,
and we're talking about we're going to read the libraries open. RuPaul's good for a Paris is burning quote, but ask her the last time she went to a ball.
And never forget, it's not a death drop, it's a dip.
It's queer as hell, it's gay as fuck, it's campy, fresh, hot topics, yes girl, you're in luck. The stars and queens, LGBTQ news, New York City, Broadway, pop culture. Hurry up and get the Fame Report. This just in is the Fame Report. It's perfect for you, so get the Fame Report with Alex Casala.
Breathe through.
I breeze through.
Yeah, you're busy.
I breeze through.
You're like the only
person. Actually, you know what? No, I actually have which one. I can't remember which one, but I got one. I got one on.
All right, well, here we go. I think this is going to be the 9th episode of my new podcast, The Fame Report. I'm here with Saley Williams and Deshaun
Wesley.
That's gone. The editors, the creators of Tens Magazine.
Yes, Tens across the board.
Okay.
How, like, you guys must be so busy.
I mean, everyone's busy. It's Pride season, so, you know, we're all super overextended, but with all that's going on with ballroom visibility, yes, we are a little extra busy.
Yeah.
Ballroom visibility. Mm-hmm. Can we first talk about, like, what was this thing happening with Marc Jacobs?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't there, but Tense was there. They had, do you know anything specific?
It was, like, a specific, you know, for Pride Month, you might as well say. There's performances happening everywhere, whether it's for, like, the clothing departments, whether it is a mock ball that's going on. But what happened is, outside of Marc Jacobs, there was, like, this little Vogue performance they had. And it led from inside, that led all the way out. And this is why it spews to the runway or the floor outside of the store.
Yeah, they were like people voguing on the streets.
Yeah, and those were legends and icons.
Kitty,
you had
Sanaya, Omari.
You had, oh gosh, it was the
Monster LaBeija.
Yeah, so it was
One of our editors, Shireen Mizrahi. Mm-hmm. And I know Kitty Mizrahi was performing, of course, Jack and commentating. So it looked like they had the right folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cute.
And then
the footage.
And then the Met did something earlier this week, too. Yeah.
Yes.
What was that?
I always say just get ready just to see random performances or, like, showcases just all around the city because, like, this is Pride, world Pride, you might as well say. But the Met was an opportunity for everyone to see legends and statements and stars all come together, and it was, like, judged by Anna Wintour.
And open to public.
And open to public, yeah.
The Met
Gala was not,
Yeah, it was no tickets, no, like, you just walk up and find a spot and you can watch the full battles go on.
Wait, did you get a photo? Were you there?
I wasn't there, but we had
people there.
Who I was there.
Oh, Precious. What's her name? The person
Precious
who emceed.
Ebony.
Yeah, yes, Precious Ebony. Precious Ebony. She got a photo with Anna Wintour.
Yeah, well, yeah. So there was, so our editor, Shireen, she was backstage with Omari, mm-hmm. and I got pictures with everyone. She got pictures of Naya and Tiffany Balmain and a few
Twiggy
other girls.
With all
so we had
Anna
that
Wintour.
Little backstage access moment with, you know, Anna.
And she was, like, smiling. Did you see how happy she looked?
Oh,
Well, I mean, because I was there. So, you know, I caught the tail end and caught the whiff of it. But, like, to see someone like Anna Wintour, when you just think that, you know, she's untouchable.
Yeah.
To be so visible in front of everyone's eyes. Even approachable. So to the point that everyone's taking photos and, like, she was smiling and she was, like, involved. And here she is on a judge's panel of a ball outside. And she's, you know, making decisions and pointing out. So I think that's the most, the shock factor.
I also heard she loves dancers.
Yes.
Like, she, I think maybe you mentioned it, but another dancer said that she just has this appreciation for dance and dancers, and she's very warm and has, like, an affinity for, you know, the art. So maybe that is part of it.
Yes.
Yeah. But why, and so why did the Met want to do something, like, ball-related?
Well, I think right now this opportunity that's being presented in front of everyone is for the show Pose. So this has been, like, the opening door factor for a lot of people to understand what's happening of our world, of what's happening inside the Vogue community or the ballroom community, excuse me, and what partakes in it. And she's been having a good eye on it, definitely through Pose. So, for example, like the Met, those she was connected with Jack Mizrahi and Twiggy, who are also connected with Pose. And you have other people who are connected, definitely for the Met Gala, because you have a performance on ballroom legends, icons, and everyone.
Which Deshawn was a part of.
Yeah, which was not a part of.
He was in there dancing.
So, inside the Met Gala. So that was a shock.
And I think the theme, being camp, there was a lot of conversation about camp and how it's a part of not only drag culture, but specifically the ballroom community and Black queer culture. You know, what were the ballroom kids doing? They were getting dressed up and living their fantasy through opulent gowns and things that, you know, we were able to create and live in this fantasy subculture. And I think that's a part of, I guess, a... just a camp theme and the camp understanding. Yeah. So I think that was very relative. And then bring in the current ballroom scene figures to kind of expose and have these colorful characters perform, and aligning that with World Pride Month. I think it was like the perfect union, the perfect time.
And it definitely have a connection between it all. Yeah. This is why it's flowing out the way it is, definitely for this year for Pride.
Before we're going to get back all of this, the other thing I wanted to bring up at the top is that New York Magazine drag ranking. What did you think? Because I wrote an article about it.
I read.
Thank you.
I read.
What did you think of it, Sally?
It was I'll describe it from the TENS perspective. So a lot of the times, I or some of the others, we go do our own research, but sometimes the followers send us the tea. So there's like, did you see this? There's no retouch in their raw face. Why they do the girls like this?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what did y'all talk about? I'm like, oh, they left the girls like that? I called it a cattle call, cheap, quick fix for Pride visibility.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
It was a one time to get the girls at DragCon and shoot the girls. The ranking part, I think, was kind of, they tried it, because I can't verify, but I believe they weren't aware.
No, they weren't.
That they weren't going to be ranked.
They weren't.
So I think that's part of the issue. And I heard that they were very stern with asking a lot of the drag queens to be a part of it. And I know some girls, I believe Trinity said she's so glad she didn't do it. Violet Chosky said she's so glad she didn't do it. Bianca said she's so glad she didn't do it. Because they felt like this was a setup. Just to use drag visibility for a quick pride click.
Yeah. I just don't like ranking people. Like, I'm okay with ranking, like, bars or, like, experiences, events, perhaps. But, like, things. Like face washes.
You saw people involved.
Yeah.
It really changed.
Could you imagine if there was an article like the 50 best people in ballroom and it was ranked?
It doesn't exist.
Well, because also like success and influence and power are so subjective.
That's true.
Yes.
And more now than ever, with the way that we're all able to operate in different corners of the internet, somebody super successful and powerful over here may not be known by anybody else
true.
Over there.
Very
and that's
true.
Also like okay.
Very true.
Because everybody is just, like, doing their own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing about the photos is that, like, he is that dude is like famous for taking those
photos. Yeah, those he's done so many covers of the president, like he's
president, like, yeah. Oprah, Taylor yes. Swift. He did the Colin Kaepernick
yes.
Nike ad. That's mm-hmm. like his photo. But I think what needed to happen was there needed to be like more education on who he is as a photographer mm-hmm. because the girls didn't know that. They just were getting pulled back there to this area. They didn't know what was really going on. It was mm-hmm. very quick and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think if they were more like, this is who this guy is, this is what he does, when they would have seen the photos, they wouldn't have been so upset by them, I think.
Yes.
Because they would have, like, understood
it was more. It was a raw, natural,
yeah.
You're going to be in your pores kind of a gig. we're going to see every...
You're going to be your pores. I love that. You're going to be your pores.
We're going to see your wig tape. We're
yes,
gonna see,
I
we're
know.
We're going to see everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And, yeah, I think the girls felt a little set up by that, and I think the fans were so used to seeing our drag queens... be seen in this fantasy,
well lit.
You know, well lit in Drag Race Filter season one, often on, you know, the girls are Facetune queens. So I think to see them that close up, that angle, and bags under their eyes and their lip lined,
yeah,
people were a little shocked by that. And then, of course, the girls were equally shocked. So,
what, let's just go back a little bit for both of you, like, your personal, like, what was your, personal journey, Deshawn, into, like, ballroom, like, ball culture?
Oy, I mean, it's been a long one, I tell you that one. This actually makes 20 years I've been involved in it. So, I mean, my journey has been great.
How old were you when you started then?
Oh, gosh, I'm 14.
You started when you were 14?
Yeah, I'm 34 now.
So. And how did you get involved with it? Like, what was your first, like,
you know,
do you remember your first experience with it?
I remember my first experience with it. You know, I think as a kid living in Brooklyn, New York, and, you know, seeing yourself.
What neighborhood?
So different. Oh, my gosh, I was in Brownsville, Brooklyn, so I was on the hood, baby. you know, seeing yourself, like, you see yourself, you're different. Everything else, it just doesn't seem right. But I've always been informed about the West Village. When I was a kid, about Christopher Street and going
yeah.
out there and being yourself. And, you know, one day in 98, somehow I ended up walking out there and I found, you know,
what were you into
place.
Before? Like, what
before,
were your interests before
ball? I was
a
modern dancer.
Okay.
I was in school for acting.
Theater? Were you in a
theater?
Theater
work. So it was the majority of all of mm-hmm. that, you know. Dancing was my skill.
Mm-hmm.
So when I seen Vogan for the first time going to West Village at 14, I lost all breaks. That point forward. So that was kind of my introduction into the scene by going to the West Village and seeing the Vulgars out there. And then from that point forward, I went every day. I met the people. I got involved. I started battling. I became the king. One of those.
And then, like, what was your entrance into it? Like, were you entered into, like, a house? Did you become part of a family?
Well, you know what?
House?
I think it's so interesting how things happen. Then, you know, you had to be involved and, like, know the people in order to join a house. You couldn't just walk up and be like, I want to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
You really had to, like, know the people who were involved. So I kind of, like, I involved myself for a little bit and figure out what was going on. And my first choice was somewhere beginner. So, you know, I went to a very beginner kind of, like, house that everyone viewed then, which was the House of Latex. And, you know, a lot of starter people get ready there. And then
mm-hmm.
they join other houses. But that's how I got involved. You know, I just went. I seen somewhere I wanted to be, and I went there.
And what about you, Sally?
Journey to ballroom. So
mm-hmm.
I discovered ballroom on YouTube. It was my first semester at St. John's. I was browsing. These are the early days of YouTube.
Where are you from?
I'm from Brooklyn.
What neighborhood?
Originally Crown Heights, but it's rebranded as Ocean Hill, so same team.
Mm-hmm.
With ballroom, I discovered it on YouTube, browsing. I remember being in, like, the computer lab, and I don't know what I put in to find it. And it was very few clips at that point. And the particular clip was Divas versus Challengers. And it was the first time I saw... it was just breaking it down. It was masculine-appearing black men dancing femininely. And that just... triggered something in my interest mm. because it was at that point me being 18 like an oxymoron. It was like, I don't understand what exactly I'm seeing, but it has house music and it's high energy and I want to know who's winning and why they're winning.
Mm-hmm.
What are the rules here? Why is who's winning and why did he win? And then I had opinions about the other person should have won, and I was immediately like caught in. I was just caught up. I remember showing it to, like, my professors and showing it to, like, my roommates in the dorms. And I was like, have you seen this?
What were you into before? Like, what were your interests at that time?
I was musical theater. I come from a musical theater background, performance background,
mm-hmm.
Even some culinary background. So I was always open to dance and all of that. And I was in school for graphic design. So I was always graphically and visually inclined. So I think that maybe helped. with me getting involved. After seeing the clip, I wanted to find out where I could see this live, and it was a little harder then. Now you can go on social media, and you know that then it was what there was beginning Facebook and dying MySpace.
Yeah, so, and Tens has a calendar.
Yeah, I mean now exactly Tens has a calendar now exactly. Right. So I remember going to the clubs and went to Escalita. And Escalita, which was my favorite club, even yeah. to this day, and seeing the kids Vogue, and I was like, oh, this is the thing I was seeing. Oh my God, this is the thing. So I was like, watched them in the club for maybe about 3 weeks, and I was like testing it out in the corner. I was doing my little hand performance, and then the kids came approaching me, like, oh, you got a little runway walk. Come on, try this out. I went to a house meeting, and joined my first house.
And what was that house?
Oh, we're not gonna get that name. She's a defunct house now. But yeah, I joined my first house and did Butch Queen runway and Big Boys runway. Soon after, I did some more investigating and joined my second house, which was the House of Legacy / Con. And I entered that house with one of my friends for, again, Big Boys Runway and Designer's Delight. And I became Josiah / Jesse Legacy, also known as Madam Legacy. And that was my...
And you MC'd, right?
For a little bit. I would never claim to be an MC, but I did do commentating at Escalita for Hip Hop versus Vulgars, and I would do commentating for Harmonica Sunbeam for Tea Dance Sundays. So that was my little, I never claimed to be a Selvin or a Jack, but I got a per cat that'll make the kids do what they need
You're
to do.
A kid.
What's that? What's a per cat?
Oh, God.
Deshaun, no, I'm going to let Deshaun, you give the kids a per cat.
What's a per cat?
No, it's a chant. It's the words that we do in some like variations of sounds that we make definitely when we chant. So
yeah.
It's like a ballroom freestyle. You saw what they were doing to Michael Precious does on the mic. And
yeah.
That's commentating, but yes.
So I actually interviewed at Hornet before the Vice documentary started. I interviewed Tati, Alex, and Precious. They came to the Hornet offices, and the really fun thing was, not many Americans really like know too much about Hornet or care too much about Hornet, but they all, especially Alex, spent so much time in Paris, where Hornet is really big. Mm. Hornet's huge, so they were like so excited, and like somebody I worked with at Hornet was a really big photographer of the ballroom scene in Paris, so they all knew him.
Mm.
So they were just really excited, and Xavier is his name and stuff, and so it was really, really fun. And that's when they did a little workshop with me where they were like teaching me some moves and trying.
Oh, so you got performance.
Oh, you got
The thing I learned the most is like the 1-2-3 hit, 1-2-3 hit.
You
like
four count. Yeah.
I honestly think just knowing that, I see it now in so much of what everybody does. Mm-hmm. And when I like ever do anything, it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we'll get back to this in a second. But then what led you guys to creating like a media brand around ball culture?
Well, so for me personally, I have a media company, Silly Williams Media, and I
what
have
is it?
Silly Williams Media, SWM. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
LLC.
LLC, yeah. Exactly.
Get the paperwork right.
Signed her, she is
right. Paying her taxes.
Yeah, buddy. We
girl.
You're paying your taxes.
Yes, taxes are paid. I've started that company 2009. With my first magazine, X, which is a fashion, art, design, bazaar publication. I also have an urban news site with another editor and radio host, Roxy Digital. And I also do branding and media for one-off clients, et cetera, et cetera. So the conversation came out of me working with Deshaun for years, right off of him doing America's Best Dance Crew. And my inquiry was, why aren't you doing more? Where's the visibility? Where is the press? So we began a business relationship of me seeking press and write-ups for him along his career, Skipping ahead a few years, he was probably about 2013. You had just done The Wiz.
Oh, yeah.
You had just done Magic Mike, and you were doing...
are the movies?
Yes. These are things.
So this was his bookings. He was...
The Wiz on TV?
Yeah.
Yes.
The Wiz Live?
The Wiz Live, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So, and Magic Mike the movie? Mm-hmm. Damn. Those are your credits.
And a few other like high profile projects, and he was just booked to do Rihanna tour, and
Auntie?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know somebody that did the thing, the foam.
Oh, the foam. Okay.
My friend Claire was the assistant to the artist that did that.
Awesome.
And she went on tour.
Oh yeah, that foam.
The foam wall.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sending emails to every queer related outlet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of silence.
Yeah.
A lot of silence.
Sure.
Some people didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. What were you emailing them about?
Doing features for Deshaun.
Mm-hmm.
Doing any features about his upcoming projects, whether it be The Wiz, like I said, or Magic Mike, or him being the current king of Vogue and the leader of Vogue visibility. Now and then and to now. And a lot of silence. We would get hits here and there, but it was like, okay, who's had this string of bookings and high-profile gigs? And a lot of it was white audience media. Maybe they didn't really understand the importance or the significance of the art form or what he was doing, or they were just unfamiliar of the newer style. They always reference, oh, it's Madonna. Oh, we've seen that.
Mm.
When it's a completely different scene from the 1990s to now. So we had a conversation about, you know, what can we do? Where can we get press? We had, of course, included him in My Media and X at the time, but it was like, well, how many times can we write about you there?
Yeah.
And the conversation started about after he comes off of tour, maybe we should do our own thing and have it be a place for Barm culture to be seen through a quality format. There were blogs, there are Barm blogs, there was Walk Me Wednesdays, there's a lot of Facebook groups, but Facebook is kept in these private groups from the rest of the world. So the group Facebook groups got like 10,000 people in the Facebook group, and everyone sees everything, but how do we find about the culture? How are we...
And how do you create content in there that can be shared and can
exactly.
be like and editorial and established? Yeah.
And the vision was fleshed out while he was away, thought of some names and some colors, and, you know, I'm very quick with a tagline. And
What's the tagline?
Of course, Tens Across, but Tens spelled with the Z, the formatting of the typography. We have a few other mini slogans that we have for different segments, and I don't want to compare it, but it was falling in line with us becoming the ballroom kind of buzz TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a format where there's different personalities, there's different sections, there's different subcategories of the website, video content, and a place where we don't have to explain Barm culture every time we talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way the language that comes out of Tens is like you already know what the lingo is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to have what is shade, what is a butch queen, you know, whatever. It's like, okay, we're going to speak directly to you. If you catch it, then you caught it.
And if you didn't,
you better ask.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the feel. We talked about who we wanted to feature. We have a small staff between the East and West Coast. At the time, Deshaun was from early West Coast, doing a lot of our Los Angeles stuff. We have two editors in San Francisco and the rest of our team, a lot of crossover from X. Do our social and go out, and we're probably out four times a week.
Yes.
Four times a week?
Or everywhere.
We're four times a week.
Well, we're exactly.
We're
like
everywhere.
Doing events.
We're doing
events, going to events. But yeah, we're probably out four, but then one day we may go to like three events a week.
Oh my God.
We saw you out one night, and we was here, there, and everywhere, so.
I get FOMO. I get a lot of FOMO, like, looking at but then I have to remember there's, like, a bunch of people doing it.
Doing it, yes.
Because I'm like, damn. But sometimes it's just you, or just...
Yeah, so what's up? We try to go in groups. So, at a minimum, sometimes it's two or three of us.
Yeah.
And we have our group and staff chat where we try to figure out, okay, where are we going tonight? Are we, do we have any particular bookings? Are we aligned to any place this week? Who can go? Who's in town this week? Yeah. Who's going to Miami? Like, this year we had our first, like, staff out of town trip. We all did Miami Pride and threw a party there.
I saw.
So that was
had a great
cute
guide for it.
Yeah,
I love that. Yeah.
So, and it's also about providing, tourism placement for people of color who may not know what's friendly or safe for them when they travel to these places for prides. Or a lot of pride is, you know, we love the girls of all colors, but something skew a little white narrative and white visibility more than having a black or Latino or even Asian experience. And
sure,
we can see that what's happening now, what is it, in D.C. and these places where they don't want rap music played.
Oh my gosh,
and
Chicago.
Chicago. Yeah. So,
what do you guys think about that?
It's been going on for years. Mm-hmm. This has been happening for so many years. Mm-hmm. I think that we're now at a place where a conversation can happen or the topic can be discussed. So how do we, you know, reach the clubs that don't want to play music when they see a specific kind come in? Or is this the way to keep it out? You know, but again, yeah, this has been going on for years.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm happy the conversation is happening today.
Yeah, definitely. Just think it's, I think it's...
because there's other, you know?
Yeah, it's blatant. It's like, we're going to say we're not going to play rap music to deter this particular crowd from coming here. Just like when they have these policies of no Tim's, no fitted,
right?
Yeah. No jeans, the dress code. It's
yeah,
dress
there was
code
a bar in Philly,
off.
Woody's. Mm. Woody's was doing that in Philly a few years ago, and they came under fire. Yeah, and it's funny because for me, I'm actually like, I don't really like a lot of rap music. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Cardi, I love Nicki, mm-hmm, but like a lot of rap music I don't like. But I would never go to a bar that said no rap music, mm-hmm, because if a bar is saying that, they're like, why wouldn't you play rap music, though?
And it's
like, there's only one reason I feel like not to play rap music, and I feel like it's because you're trying to, like,
trying
defer
to
a crowd, yeah, or, like, do something, you know what I mean?
And if it's, like, if it's a particular club, we're not going to, and it's, so I got into a big thing with on the QWERTY comments, and I was arguing to girls for days, but it was, like, there was all of these, like, weak reasons that they were giving. Oh, well, rap music isn't dance music. Rap music, by definition, is dance music. Rap music started by people rapping over house music.
House
it
music,
is
yeah,
that is what rap music
yeah
is. So, okay, that's done. Well, it has foul language. So does every other kind of popular music. Rap music, one, is popular music. Oh, it's too sexual. What kind of music right now on radio is not sexually charged?
Yeah.
If you don't want to have profanity, there is a radio version for every song on Top 40. So what now?
Mm-hmm. And then did you see the thing about, of course it happened a while ago, but like Monster with like the flyers?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, like,
yeah.
See,
that was
this
really
been
bad
happening for years. This is now it's being discussed, and now people are not able to witness and see, you know, blatantly what's being said.
And
right,
and it's like, and I want to play, you know, working in nightlife, I understand some of the scrutiny these venues come under from the police,
the
from the community around it. They don't want that crowd in their neighborhood, so they feel like, okay, if I need to save my business, maybe I need to
change things.
Because I'm, you know, working with Ben and seeing how he had to fight the liquor authority all those years, and how XL had issues with the police next door,
mm-hmm,
when it was an urban night, and they used to make the girls go out the back.
Out the back, yeah.
And I was like, and that's a fierce thing, but it was also like, this is just what it is for us to have to pretty much sneak in and sneak out and have a good time and have an experience that's truly ours. And that just feeds into why a publication like TENS exists. We get criticism. We get some white hate here and there.
I'm sure do you get hate from... But you get black hate too. I'm sure, like,
not so much.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
not so much. We may get sensitivities about
certain things,
but it's more. We like what you do. We just want more of this specific.
Oh, this,
type.
So,
yeah,
what are white people
yeah
saying about you?
Oh, they. So, so I mean, if I can pull up the screenshots, if we get.
No, really.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
That's
yeah
crazy.
We get things.
It happens
when we post stories about things like this we just discussed. Oh, you guys are always picking at these topics and over-exaggerating. Why don't you post more white people? Why don't you post this and that? And it's like, we post We post everyone. To be very clear.
Oh, for even sure though
we're,
you do.
Even though we are, by definition, a publication for queer people of color, but if anyone is a part of the Barm Scene community, you are included in that. That is our. So we post, of course, Trace. We post the kids in Paris.
So many people of color.
You know, any color, like so.
Variation.
But also, it's also okay to be first and foremost for people of color, and you don't have to explain yourself.
Because
that's just like
we humor. I mean, if they feel like they have like
we don't like it, oh my God, it's all like girl hair.
It's so they feel like it always comes with this energy like we got you. It's like look at you, y'all are being racist towards
right, but that doesn't exist.
Well, they don't seem to believe that.
Right, those are people who don't understand what the actual word racism means, which actually means that it's something that has to do with power. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And power, those people, power history,
anybody that uses the term reverse racism doesn't. Honestly, truly know what racism is. And I only really know because I took an amazing class at Temple University. Everybody at Temple University, because Temple University is an amazing place, you have to take race studies. Mm-hmm. And you're reading amazing books, and you're just like learning so much about it, and you're having really complicated and tough conversations. Mm-hmm. In a very racially charged Philadelphia is like super diverse, and Temple is very diverse. But that's where I really learned like the idea that like reverse racism really doesn't. Of course, people can still be ignorant.
People can
and
be
still
bigoted.
Be,
people can be prejudiced. All of those things are 100%.
But for me, working in LGBTQ media, it's like, what if a straight person came to out and was like, "You're not posting enough."
They're
about
doing
people.
That. What just happened? Yes. And the police officer. They went to during a pride search for police officers, and the straight guy got turned away, and he sued and won.
Who did he sue?
He sued the police department because they wouldn't hire him during a LGBT
recruiting event.
Yeah, so people, the girls are trying it.
Yes, they are.
They're trying to flip it on you.
Straight pride coming soon.
Straight pride.
Yes.
Listen, it's coming soon.
Are you going to be a straight pride? Are they
going to
hire?
Can we pass the straight?
I can go to straight pride.
You bust a straight pride. Straight pride.
But then let's talk about there is so much energy right now about ballroom culture. As people that are really in it, like a part of this community and define this scene, how does it feel when mainstream culture welcomes it? Like, what is your experience with that?
As far as when you say the welcoming, like mainstream culture, as far as like the industry welcoming, voguing our community.
Does it feel like that right now? Does it feel like it's being welcomed or no? Do you think there's still
a
tokenism?
Yes, there's going to be 50-50 of everything. You're going to have the people who are going to bring in the real, authentic, true, love and blood, sweat and tears of ballroom, and you're gonna have those who just want to do it because they feel like it's the next opportunity for them to showcase, you know,
to be trendy.
To be trendy, exactly.
Right.
So, yes, it's beautiful, and we love for people to come to our community and speak to us, figure out what's going on, figure out who's who, what's what, and how it's happening, and get your experience and see what's going on in our culture. And I think the good part about it is, you know, now we've been having the opportunity to explain our story. To figure out where we come from, how do we get there, what do we do to get there, and what it took for us to be there. And you can't come here and just see 2 seconds of us and then try to go outside and say, oh, this is it, I know what it is, because it's more in depth. I always say it's going to take you like 2 years to understand what really ballroom culture is, mm-hmm. and to understand the quality that we come with. And I think it's amazing that it's switching over to mainstream and how it's being showcased, because again, this is something that's been hidden for so long. I remember it being called the underground ballroom. Now we can take underground away. Now it's just ballroom.
Yeah.
Now we have to separate now as mainstream ballroom and then go to a Kiki, because now we're creating these
subcultures. Yep. Yeah, the sub-sub
scenes that's going on from a main scene. So it opens up so much, but still the fight that we still exist with today is about the authenticity, the authentic stuff that goes on with it. The how it's not, you know, what kills me is how someone is like, oh my God, you're giving me pink purse realness. I don't know what that is.
What is that?
I don't know what pink purse realness is.
Yes, we are calling our Drag Race. Yes.
It's one of those things we experience.
You're saying Drag Race is a little bit, is at times maybe artificially co-opting?
All the time.
Yeah. Look at every episode.
Every episode. I mean, there's been some more drastic moments in Drag Race history where it's like, what are we doing?
Right.
I think, from the whole Death Drop thing to the Shablam stuff.
Yes, to... which I do want to talk. I'm so happy about that because I kind of forgot.
Yes. So
because people really do not like it when a dip gets called either a Shablam or a Death Drop, correct?
That's yes, correct. Because I mean it's changing our narrative. That's not what it was called. That's not what it's called. And people who use those words are usually not from ballroom. And what happens where ballroom has been placed? We just finished saying ballroom was not as visible and mainstream. These people are coming, seeing this, have larger platforms than ballroom at the time, and then changing the name and then spreading this information to the masses. When RuPaul's Drag Race started, of course, RuPaul's Drag Race is one of the highest rated LGBT formatted shows. So if you have RuPaul's Drag Race, the most famous drag queen in all of the land, and her girls talking about Shablam this and realness and you're doing Death Drop that, and we're talking about we're going to read the libraries open. Mm-hmm. RuPaul's good for a Paris is Burning quote, but ask her the last time she went to a ball.
Never. So, or not in a long time. Because she wasn't really part of ballroom culture.
Oh, she was never part of ballroom culture.
Right, she wasn't in the house. Yeah.
She was part of New York culture.
Right.
And we give her all that she's... We give all the to Caesar that Caesar's.
She also admitted to India Moore she hadn't watched Pose.
She was very much part of like the club kid culture. Oh, that's all her all day. She's a legend. We give her all her life. She gives a look. She was a genderfuck queen. All of that. Mm-hmm. But when it came to the
almost
girls.
Punk.
Yeah, punk.
She was part of that band she was in the 80s. It was like a punk band.
Yes.
And that's what started her.
Super ahead of her time then and through the 90s. But when it came to the girls uptown and the girls in the ball, there was no time made. There was no visits.
Yeah, no.
So
when you mean uptown, you mean like in Harlem and Washington
Heights? Yeah, wherever the balls were during the 90s, she was not present.
Mostly in uptown.
And
in Brooklyn? Would there be balls in Brooklyn?
I mean, just saying in general during the time that she was around and out and about, that like when the balls did exist up in Harlem,
right.
Like the visibility or the support
during the Mark Barham era, she was not there. She was not to be found. But the fact that, I mean, we want ballroom culture to be a part of Drag Race. It's a part of drag history, so it should be. But it's, you have an amazing team to, when there's a voguing challenge on the show, there are plenty of...
Bring in Tati, bring in Alex Mugler,
bring in people who do classes.
Leomi,
Deshawn, they tour and do classes all around the world. Any of them who are ballroom verified would be great to have on the show. I think the biggest issue was this season.
They bring in Todrick.
They not even Todrick. There was someone else, and
Wong. Oh my gosh, the Alex Wall or something. So, like they brought a dancer in to teach a folk session.
So
but he's like a dancer. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, have people do what they do.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just them being intimidated or them
because
ballroom is more real to me, like, and it's more kind of like a sincerity of like queer art culture, like that maybe they're just intimidated if they bring it, because everything that's brought into that space, in my opinion, is super calculated. It's super not sincere in some ways, you know what I mean? And I think that if you brought in somebody like that, like, they would just be intimidated by the fact that, like, they are so real that could potentially, you know, there was that video of...
Only reason why I disagree with that, because we have people in place within this culture that can make sure everything is done completely fine without you feeling any type of... And we're not a culture that's just want to come and just, you know, beat down your throat.
No, that's not
what it is. And, you know, and I see where the intimidation, what people may see because of... you know, what's going on with the culture, and when something's not correct, how the culture can speak up about it. And, but if that's so much the intimidation, then why initially go for the right, you know, get the right people?
And
I don't think they really potentially know what they're talking about. And that's also what you're intimidated by. You're intimidated by that, which you don't know. And I don't think that they pretend like they know more than they actually do.
Listen, the girls are reachable. The girls have Instagrams. Right. Everyone, the right people have the 100,000 followers. And, you know, RuPaul has worked with ballroom producers. So she knows well enough who to call when she wants that ballroom sound on her albums.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants that flavor and that beat. So... I don't think it's a missed opportunity of not knowing who to call and where to go.
It's
about what's easiest and what's most convenient without fully getting your, you know, yourself involved.
Yes.
But which, but it's like, how many seasons is it now? Like, let's get it 11. Together.
You know. 11 seasons.
What did you think of the Equinox thing? What did you think of the
Equinox? That's great. Amazing. That's how you do it right. You cast the girls from the community. You have the people in production from the community. You have the hairstylist from the community. You have the makeup artist from the community.
Everything.
The stylist from the community. It was ballroom crafted. And it was received well.
My thing is, ballroom, if you need us to put on a show, that's not a problem. We have everything we need within our culture. Not saying that, oh, we don't want to let anyone in, that's not the thing. But what we're saying is, when you do it right and when it's done right, when the research is done, when you get the right people, when you get the right team to put it together, this is how it showcased. It was a team of 7 trans women for Equinox. How groundbreaking is that?
And I hope they got paid well.
Oh my gosh, come on. You know, that's not an issue.
No, I hope it was. I saw it, and yeah. I know how much I pay to go to Equinox.
Yeah.
And I
was, is that?
No. Yeah, I got more of the story. I actually reached out to them like a month ago. You're going to laugh. I reached out to them like a month ago. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for this? Like asking to be in their Pride campaign. I mean, I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I know y'all motherfuckers are going to do some LGBT Pride campaign. Like, I want to be in it. And the girl responded. She was like, oh, yeah, well, like, we definitely will include you or whatever. And then I saw it come out. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be in that.
I'm not
going to be in that. Like, it's 7 trans women of color who are all in the
voting. I mean, if you want to be.
But then I was like, I wonder if they got paid well for that. And I know somebody that I think did some digging, and he was like, they did. I was like, good. Because I also don't want people to be like, just
the face of these organizations, and then they're getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah, like I also hope they got. I also was hoping they got like a year membership, or like not only do they get paid, but I also hope like Equinox is like welcoming them into the space by not only like giving them a free membership, but welcoming them into the space.
And these are the things that I think that we're having these conversations and discussions about even today, and definitely about Pride and what's going on for this month. Because, you know, the topic of the discussion happening today is, you know, about these brands just putting a gay Pride flag over a shirt and calling it what it is. So this is why, yes, I love that we asked, did they get paid correct? Because are they just being displayed for just this month and that's it?
Yeah.
What's going on after June?
Like, while it's, like, opposes to hit, you know.
Go do that Vogue stuff.
And if they didn't, if this person came back to me and was like, they didn't get paid well, I would have blew up their spot. I mean, I even though it's, like, just being, like, okay, you know, what visibility, per se, is, like, Equinox going to give? These people are going to be, like, they need to be given, they need to be paid, they need to be compensated, you know what I mean?
And this is the things we go through, like, you know, you can't, nowadays you just can't throw something over us and be like, oh, this is cute, because then we're going to ask lots of questions.
Right.
And that's what I do love about the scene, is that when we feel something isn't right, we're going to ask.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're going to question out the yin yang. You're going to find someone who's going to work with you, but we're going to ask lots and lots of questions just to make sure it's authentic, it's right, it's being displayed correct.
Have you been in Pose?
So that's my thing. I'm actually in this season.
You're in season 2.
Yes, I am.
You were in season 1.
Nope.
That's exciting.
So I'm in this season.
Like, did you work at all on season 1?
I did. I worked episode 1 of season 1.
The pilot?
The pilot. And I was like one of the Vogues on the pier. But more so working with Pose in general last year, I was doing majority of the events and promotions. And
nice.
Stuff like that. So I was like,
did you do the ball? Did
yeah,
you
I did
do
the ball.
Ball in Harlem?
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was me. I was an MC and a microphone. I was the guy
in the gold outfit.
Yeah. Yeah, with the cape.
You were there.
I was there, yes. The team was there.
That was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah,
I kind of wish they did. I mean, because I didn't get invited to the premiere, but I know Johnny was. Johnny went that night.
He was there.
I recorded a podcast with him the day that he was going, or the day before.
Oh, that jacket. Did you see that jacket?
Yeah, he looked good. How was the premiere?
Premiere was cute. We did the red carpet, which you just put out yesterday.
Yes, so some video content.
Yes,
love that.
We got to interview all the lovely ladies and gentlemen.
I love them. I really do. All 4 of them.
Yes.
I mean, the girls and Billy.
For
the premiere, you know, we got to actually see the first episode before, you know, everything. So beautiful. As you can see, the message.
I actually haven't seen this.
Oh, my gosh.
Yet.
What you get
there. I bought
the
it.
Whiff.
Just.
Oh, yeah. The first episode. It just, again, one thing I do love about Pose is that we hit a lot of issues that, like, are not discussed, or, like, a lot of people don't discuss. And, and episode 1 did just that. So the premiere.
Well, there's,
was
like, a church scene with, like, lots of dying.
Yeah.
A lot of people are talking about that now. And also, it starts, right, with Vogue becoming popular, mm-hmm. and then how that did what in 1990, what we're kind of talking about now.
Yeah,
about
definitely.
This, like, and I think they yeah. made that as a point.
Yeah,
right. The point they had to be like very clear. Like,
yes.
That's everyone thinks like, oh, Pose is hot now, so like everyone's like gonna be a star.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
Right.
Certain girls may change during the Madonna era, but the girls still ballroom still, you know, ballroom is still ballroom.
Right.
During the Madonna era and clearly after.
After.
And we still did what we had to do.
But, and when did Paris is Burning come out?
Paris Burning 1989, 1990.
So it was also around the same time as Vogue.
Well, you know, if you wanna.
It was a little, so it filmed before, it did the film, like the Sundance and all that before 1990, and I think it did a theatrical release in 1990.
Yeah.
So it was out prior, but it was nationwide in 1990.
And then I wonder how much Paris is Burning itself kind of popularized or just brought it into the, I mean, not that much. I think it kind of had more of a cult resurgence later, but
yes.
I'm sure Paris is Burning also got a lot more people talking about it. And
definitely. Yeah, like, you know, I think, yeah. you know, I always say that Paris is Burning is like the ballroom Bible that people kind of say we go to because, like, that's the original. That's where it started.
And
that's
is it
where,
is like, that true?
Know,
do you?
I mean, no. I mean, we go there, you know, that's a reference. That's I say to always introduce everyone to what the ballroom scene is going
it's
on.
One it's one story. It's one
yeah,
moment.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's one moment in time within our culture where this is going on.
What was it? Six particular people.
Yep, of six particular people.
But it's not the earliest footage of ballroom.
Yeah, like there's earlier footage of ballroom.
And
for
sure. This is what the big clip that we had, the 1982 clip
1982,
from
Pepa
LaBeige's Fantasy Harlem mm-hmm. Ball,
oh.
Which we just included in a presentation that Tenz is doing for San Francisco Pride.
You have the footage?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, how did you get the footage?
Oh, it's you know, VHS tapes. There's footage. That's just...
Right, no, I know, but how did you get it? I'm just curious.
Oh,
like,
it was a pass-along.
Yes,
was
like, that's amazing. Clip. That stuff is really important to archive.
Yeah, it is. Archive,
we have DVDs, and we're actually in the beginning, speaking of that, we're working on a series called the LSS, where we talk to ballroom legends and icons, and we talk about their time walking balls in the early 80s, 90s, and then if they have footage, they share it, and we watch them watching themselves. So one of the episodes that we filmed before Hector's passing was, Hector mm-hmm. Travaganza's passing, was the Shade Festival in 1983. So we had Hector and R.R. Chanel watch their ball and kind of relive that moment. So yeah, there's definitely footage. There's VHS tapes. There's DVDs. There's MP4s.
It's so much footage that, like, you know, again, we've seen majority of stuff on YouTube. And yes, YouTube is a place where if you want to find a Vogue clip, you can find it mm-hmm. here. But it's a lot of archive of many years of ballroom that hasn't been documented.
Yeah,
I mean, that's documented that you haven't seen yet. You know?
Yeah,
and there's a lot of great channels that have been uploading like archive footage, like Ballroom Throwbacks, Sugar Champagne, Ball Vid or Ball DVD. So there are places if you know where to look, you can find amazing clips from the 90s and in the late 80s. Once you get ahead of the mid 80s, and you're kind of like scratching.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, the quintessential moment for Ballroom was the 1968 with Crystal LaBeija versus, you know, Sabrina, which was the kind of the pivotal beginning of it.
In the Queen.
Yes.
Queen, yep.
Right, which is about to be remastered and re-released.
Really?
Oh, I thought okay, wow.
Along with Paris is Burning? Okay.
No, just the Queen is like getting a whole new
its
re-release.
Own, okay.
I think it's going to be in theaters, and yeah, this person emailed me and they were like, can you take the trailer out of this old article you wrote and put the new trailer in?
Okay.
But yeah, there's a famous fight. I never actually seen the Queen, but there's a famous fight between them.
Yes, it's between Harlow, Crystal LaBeija, and Sabrina.
Yes.
Yes.
What, what do you do in Pose 2? Like, season 2? Like, what do you...
I got a character. I mean, joins the house. You know, it's
you're acting. I'm
a full actor in this season 2 of Pose.
Amazing.
And I actually start for this episode coming up.
Ah, my God! Perfect timing!
Yes.
Well, that's amazing. What does Pride mean to you?
Well, I can always say Pride is so different for many people. The explanation can be different. The meaning can be different. For me, you know, I came out in like 98, so I've experienced Pride in many different variations.
How was that experience coming out?
I mean, coming up is very difficult.
Coming out.
Coming out as, you know, predominantly, you know, church-going black family, you know, where You know, if you're doing something effeminate, it's wrong immediately. So I definitely after like overcoming that kind of experience and coming out at a young age of 14 and learning who I was, I think that's what pride was for me. Learning who I was as a black, gay, young man, definitely open, coming out at an early age. It's like trying to figure out what that was, who I am, who I was put onto earth to be. And for that, I do give a lot of thanks to like finding, you know, Christopher Street, finding these experiences, definitely in a world where being gay was completely wrong back in the like late 90s. But like that's pride for me, being yourself, you know, walking around in your true being, your true form. And I found that with pride.
And you?
Pride for me is being me. Pride is I don't have to answer anyone's questions about who I do, what I do, and how I do it. I present myself as I choose, when I choose. If I want to be up in drags one moment, if I want to be the trade the next, if I want to slay the kids or get slayed, that's my choice. And that is just how I choose to live. I don't like to have this, I don't change my Facebook to a particular orientation. I don't, that's not how I've done it. But when I meet you, I'm me. And I'm that way with my family, I'm that way with friends, I'm the way at work, I'm that way when I meet new clients. I don't do the long narrative of, hi, I'm a, like, I don't.
It's not so much talk with you, it's more about being.
If you caught it, then you caught it, and hi, what's the tea?
Where does that confidence come from?
I think that's coming from my musical theater background. And I think I was toughened up before realizing any kind of like queer experience, realizing I was being criticized for my interest in those things. And coming from Brooklyn and being in the hood, if I was going to, and also being a bigger person too, like growing up, those ordeals made me toughen up very quick. You can't be the fat sissy in Brooklyn. That's not gonna work. So you can pick and choose when you can pump around the house, but when you're out in the street, you better figure it out, or you're gonna be bullied. And bullying happens, and you can either succumb to the bullying or you can say what happened, you want to fight or not. And that was my angle.
It was always everybody. That was well, again, angle. A lot of people don't know the angles that, like, definitely during a certain period of time where what you have to experience or go through just to be your true self, and what you had to be very mindful of depending on where you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a lot of, you know, things we don't talk about compared to the kids today where they just get to walk around so full.
Oh, yes. Like, it's such a weird thing, like, not to drag it, but, like, there's all of this amazing conversation about bullying and all of this great conversation about children expressing themselves, but I think there should be some kind of conversation about owning who you are in a way where it doesn't bother you. That's you figure it out, and I guess that's like on a conditionary per child. Like, my story can't work for every type of kid. Some kids may be more sensitive than I am, but I think that should be part of that conversation. Figure out what kind of kid you have. Like, you can't just, okay, everyone getting the same dose or whatever. Figure out what kind of kid you have. If your kid can handle it, toughen him up, you know, prepare him for the world. Don't lie to your kid about the world he's living in or they're living in. Don't tell the kid that they're living in, you know, utopia. Even if you want them to be as free as possible, make them aware that it's such a harsh conversation.
Yeah, but sometimes...
you need to tell the kid, like, someone in the world hates you, and that's fine. You don't deal with them. Be close to the people who really live for you and love you, but be aware of that presence that someone may come for you, and then when they come for you, you serve them.
Well, it's like Johnny was talking about. He's like, people are sometimes so fearful of acknowledging the darkness that they don't, but that actually prevents you from truly living in the light.
Exactly.
And you have to kind of honor and understand that both exist.
Exactly.
And for me, too, it was like there was a moment when everybody was saying it gets better. And I was kind of like, sometimes it doesn't really get better.
Exactly.
I mean, there's this narrative that we tell kids. And, of course, we want kids to survive through whatever they're struggling with when they're younger. Never, like, you know, God forbid, commit suicide or something. But sometimes it's like, you know what? Like, life is tough. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you're not meant to be here to experience
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Tell them how this is how you could approach this situation versus it'll just get better. Like, address the individual problems. And as a parent, really be in tune with your kid. You have to be all up in their business. But kids want you to know that something's wrong.
What do you say to somebody who's maybe experiencing or trying to visit ballroom culture? Like, because it's getting so popular. Like, I saw on the, it wasn't on the Latex Ball. It was on, what was the other event you sent me? On that.
House of Yes.
On the House of Yes, it kind of had a thing that was like, if you're, like we welcome everybody, but like if you're not like part of the ballroom culture, like we expect you to respect, like
yeah, and that's the way you should do it, because we know every ball that's kind of mixed audience.
Yes.
There is the drunk, lovely, white man or girl who
tries to get up on stage.
Feels it, and it feels their cocked and lift, and it gets very. I can do this too. I can do that shimmy and shake, and they interrupt the ball. Every ball, it goes out there, and I've been on many judges' panel. I can point out who it's going to be.
Yeah, of course.
Because they're really revving up.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna go do that, and it's like.
And they're trying to make it about them.
Yes. to make it about them, and that's what happens with so many subcultures. People want to go and be involved, but they have to check themselves and know that this is not about me.
Mm-hmm.
You are there to spectate.
Mm-hmm.
And be a spectator and just absorb it and then take it home with you and cherish them. When not, it's about me. I'm the girl now. No.
Did you see that one? Go on. What were you saying?
No, I was just saying that. And the interesting part is, now if you knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
You might have got with your life.
But if you don't know what you're doing.
With no skills.
That's when it becomes.
And here I am thinking, because I know the 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm going to be able to go.
But no, if that's how you felt in your private space, in your moment, but like in a ball, like that just happened with the girls in this judge's ballroom, because that just happened when the fraternities were doing their stroll.
Oh yeah.
Some girl jumped in the line in the middle of the sorority fraternities doing their stroll, and she got yanked. It was like, let people who were doing a very specific ritual or dance or style, let them do their thing. Enjoy it. You are there. It's not in private because we want you to enjoy what you're seeing.
Yeah.
But just like you watch your favorite celebrity, you don't got to go touch them. You're not touching Madonna.
Yeah.
You're not touching Britney.
Nobody's touching
you
Madonna.
You would be whisked away if you go and thought that you can go up there and sing with Madonna and Britney. So give the girls that same respect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is. It's not about, oh, you can't be a particular type of person to be in the space. No, come on, pay that entry.
Did you see the one girl with the necklace, though? That one white girl, the one blonde girl? She was obviously a dancer.
Oh,
she
Russian.
Was doing, I think she was Russian, but she was doing tricks and twirls, and then she had like the necklace. You didn't see
Russia.
This? On Twitter. Oh, on viral. Just a few days ago.
She's voguing, and she takes off her beads, and she flips it forward, flips it back, and
it's like
insane.
Oh, yeah, what?
Oh, was this recently?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But people were like, if you're going to be a white person at a ball, do it like this.
Yeah, but it's so interesting because the ball, Russia, that was, she's in Russia. There was a ball, it's a huge ballroom scene in Russia. Yeah, she's a part of it. She's in House of Ninja. So, you know, she's out there. She's doing her thing. But you know what? To the naked eye, they're like, if y'all don't vogue like this, child, don't you dare go out there and do it. And I mean, yeah. But it's awesome. That video, child, yeah. That video.
The other thing that I think is great about that pose, and I haven't talked too much about this with anybody or seen it, is just seeing like a brown black man loving a brown black man and then seeing their relationship. Because I said something stupid a few years ago, or like a year or two ago. I said something about like Karamo and his partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I basically was literally just trying to do something about them getting engaged or something. Mm-hmm. And I made it like more than what it really was. And I was like, it's so good that they're giving like interracial love, like interracial queer gay love, like more of a platform or whatever. And somebody, I won't say who it was, but they were like, actually, like, no. Like, there is a lot of examples of interracial queer love, not only in media, but also just like in the lives of celebrities. And they were like, 6 feet under, interracial. It's like so much. And then they were like, they were going through the celebrities. RuPaul, Wanda Sykes, Karamo, they're all interracial. And then I was like, oh my God, you're right, I'm so wrong. Just because like, I'm like, where do we actually see brown love, brown queer love, and brown queer love?
And that's been a internal, I guess, specifically black gay male conversation. And that was a big celebration seeing Ricky and Damon in a couple, because there really isn't a lot of that, let alone we're talking about, you know, gay relationships or anything. We're not seeing those complexions together.
Right.
Because even if it's people of color, it can be interracial guy and a lighter fair-skinned guy. We're not seeing two chocolate men finding themselves and enjoying each other. It's always this fairer moment. Mm-hmm. Or
I think it's usually like the studios are like, okay, we're going to be diverse. We're going to have a gay couple. And like, let's make one of them black. And mm-hmm. they're checking it off the list. You know what I mean? Even like the Family Stone, big major studio movie. There's a gay couple, they're interracial. You know what I mean? So it's always like kind of that. So what is interesting that I saw this show up in Harlem and it was like so good. And it was, it really, really talked about all of this too as well. After seeing that too, I was like, now after I've seen this like play about like all these like complex relationships and everything, like, wow, now I'm understanding like it just doesn't happen that much. Mm-hmm. So what is that experience for you, like seeing that? Like, what is that?
Well, I think, which is also the shock for me as well too, because my shock is I've been in this every day all my life to see, you know, two black men in a relationship. This is something I'm used to in real life. But so it's just so weird, like when I go on set, now that I'm on this show, that I'm hearing the workers, the PAs, the assistants, like, hey, this is kind of unique that I'm seeing an all black LGBTQ cast that's going on. Well, black and Latino, and it's a mix.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always a shock factor for them to see how we're being presented now. Now how we're being on the forefront. Now we're given the platforms. Now we're able to talk about our issues. And that's what I love about Pose, because we talk about a lot of issues. Now people are looking up information on, what's that whole island that they set on the show?
The island with
the bodies.
The AIDS fix. Yeah. Yes. People didn't know about that was a thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Never knew that was a thing.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy issues are being talked about. Like, here, how we're, in order for, you know, this representation for us to happen, you know, we speak about the issues, it brings them back here, and then now the conversation is being discussed because we're able to see it. So there's always some ways that we're trying to, like, get people to understand where we are, and if this is a way that you get people, why not go for it? But I think it's so beautiful to hear, like, workers who work in other shows and experience other things say that, like, I'm here with a whole bunch of, like, a cast that has more than five trans women working on set. And this is just something that's so amazing. I just think it's so beautiful. And I still think that this is so much more to talk about.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Fame Report. Make sure to follow TENS Magazine on all social media platforms and subscribe to The Fame Report today.